This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
We are on a verdict watch here at Crime Story. That's right, it's the Diddy verdict watch. Now, the defense has claimed to the jury with a straight face that those violent attacks, some caught on video, are all just homemade porn. Okay? During the Diddy verdict watch, it has promulgated outside the courthouse. There are T-shirts for sale, Vegas bets through the roof, tarot card predictions, but it all boils down to what 12 individuals believe. I'm Nancy Grace. This is Crime Stories. I want to thank you for being with us. Sean Combs walking into the courtroom. All namaste. What? A yoga Zen thing?
Greeting his lawyers with a yoga studio-esque bow.
Namaste, my rear end.
This is horrific that he's allowed to walk into court and he's being all cute and calm.
He can namaste his way all the way to the MDC. He wasn't all namaste in the middle of all these freak-offs. He can chill out behind bars for the rest of his life for all I care. After bombshell closing statements, the judge charged the jury throughout the morning, and we are in a verdict watch here at Crime Stories as we wait for the Sean Combs verdict to be handed down by a jury of 12. Joining us now outside the Monahan Federal Courthouse, Tisa Tells, host of Tisa Tells on YouTube. Tisa, thank you for being with us. What happened in court today?
In court, Mark Agnifilio came in like he had had the worst news delivered to him. He was in walking around, furrowed brow, going in and out. Nobody knows what happened. However, the jury got the instructions. And something's telling me that his strawberry lemonade defense might be falling apart before it even had a chance to take hold.
Okay, for those that don't know about the strawberry lemonade defense among so many other defenses, such as it was just homemade porn, really? Okay, does that include the Cassie Ventura beatdown video? That said, strawberry lemonade, explain. This really took the cake.
Strawberry lemonade defense is something I hope I never hear again. I will never be able to look at Country Time lemonade again. Mark Agnifilio started off by saying, you know, it's like when your partner, sometimes they like it, but you don't like it. But you kind of like what your partner likes because you want to please them. Again, the jury and the galley was looking like, sir, what are you talking about? He looked like he was like, okay, too far. It's like, and then he immediately switched to, it's like drinking strawberry lemonade. Your partner might love it. You don't like it. But over time, you come to like it because you want to please your partner. Again, Mark Agnifilio was doing a don't believe you're lying eyes and ears. Just focus in on me. His wife was in court, and she said that she's seen him his whole career, and this was the best closing she's ever seen him perform. And I gotta say, if that was the best, I would hate to see the worst.
You know, Tisa Tells, throughout the defense closing statement, we heard Agnifilio use one old, tired phrase after the next, such as, she wanted it. She got paid, as if that's a defense to the beatings, making a lot of comments about how much money Cassie Ventura had, how much money he was referring to Jane still living in the home that Diddy had paid for. On and on with so many old, tired phrases. I'm very curious at reflecting on really disdainful theories about rape victims. I'm very curious how the jury was responding to that.
The funny thing is, I thought it was my imagination, but I talked to a few people also that were sitting in court. He lost the jury. He went so far as to say, you want to talk about old school rape theories? He said, and then she pulled out the oldest trick in the book. He raped me. And she said it just like that. The jury's eyes kind of looked like, what is going on? He tried to imply Cassie was a minx that seduced all these men. She was gangster. She could take two or three men at a time. Cassie was a woman that liked sex. It was so disgusting. And the funny thing is, and I'll be honest with you, he came in really charming the jury, making jokes. But once he started going into that old school misogyny, the jury was turned off. And the thing is, he started to seem like to get a little nervous. It's almost like he realized that he had lost the jury. It was really startling to see.
Okay, let me understand what you just said, Tisa Tales. Everyone, Tisa Tales from Tisa Tales on YouTube joining us outside the courthouse. And what a day it has been in the courtroom. We'll get into jury instructions in just a moment. But did you say that Agnifilo, the lead defense attorney, stated that Cassie was a gangster and that she was fine to take 2 to 3 men at once?
He said that what he actually said was she juggled them 2-3 at a time. But Nancy, you hit it on the head. That inference, that little sly, gross thought he was trying to plant in the jury's head, 2 to 3, let's not forget what she was getting the on her. It was 2 or 3 people. It was disgusting to see what he was doing. And that inference that you picked up on was not lost on the jury. He lost them with that old school misogyny. It was too much. It was too much.
Okay, wait a minute. Did he actually say the word gangster? Did he say
yes.
that?
Yes, he said Cassie was straight up. And this is right after he was referring to her juggling 2 or 3 at a time. Cassie was gangster. She didn't care. I mean, I guess I don't want to sound jazzy. There's nothing wrong with this. This is a woman that liked sex. She liked it. She was in control. She knew what she wanted. It was back to back to back grossness. And again, I can understand if the prosecution had not done such a great job with their closing arguments, maybe you could have skated by, but it was night and day, and it really made the jury, in my mind, say, whose side are you on, and where are you going to draw the line at where you see victims? It was very startling.
So let me understand this. The white bread boy from law school called the rape victims gangster. Did I just hear that?
Yes. And again, it sounded just as cheesy and corny and landed like a load of bricks, but he still did it. And it made me think, was Diddy involved in that closing argument? Was he giving him notes about, no, call her straight gangster? Again, maybe right message, wrong messenger. That was a very cringe moment. You know, as soon as it came out of Mark's mouth, you could tell he just wanted to make that go away and just move on to the next point.
Okay, joining me, Rob Shooter. He is the host of Naughty But Nice podcast, and you can find him at Rob Shooter, and that's S-H-U-T-E-R, not Bang Bang Shooter. RobShooter.substack.com. Former publicist for Sean Combs. Okay, I'm just trying to get that mental picture of Agnifilo, the white bread boy from law school, fixing his mouth to call the rape victims gangster, and they could take it, that Cassie could juggle 2 to 3 men at a time. You're the PR guru. I bet that fell flat.
Worse than that, Nancy. It's absolutely tone deaf. I'm shocked that Diddy's paying good money for this legal team. And Diddy is a perfectionist, at least when I worked with him. He certainly likes to win and have things his own way. I can't believe that this is the argument that they're using, that he's allowing them to use, that he's not objecting to it. He has made a living for 20 years, really, really understanding what the audience wants. And I know he's looking at that jury like an audience. He's been on stage and he knows what it's like to lose an audience. He's played the Garden, some of the biggest venues in the world. Now he's sitting in this courtroom and he can tell. He's a professional at this, Nancy. He can tell that this just is not working. I am so surprised that they are doing this, and I'm even more surprised that Diddy hasn't at least tried to correct this ship. It's a bad, bad look.
Yeah, and here's the thing, Shooter. Once you commit to the lawyer that's going to deliver the closings, you're stuck. You can have a fleet of 5, 7, 8 lawyers like the defense has, but only one lawyer can be tasked with delivering closing statements. If you'll think back to the Alex Murdaugh double murder trial, where he was charged and convicted of murdering his wife, Maggie, and son, Paul, they wanted to split that up so the good old boy could start Hartpootlian the closings and then bring on a younger and more spry lawyer to hit the facts. No, that was not allowed. There is a reason. Only one lawyer can give openings and closings, and they picked Agnifilo. I told them at the get-go, do not do that. After his disastrous softball interview with Harvey Levin about the baby oil, it was cringy, right? Way cringe. He was not fit to do closings. He may be a legal mastermind, but no, N.O., they had Steele, an excellent lawyer, just got a young thug off. They have Tenny Garagos, daughter of Mark Garagos, great lawyer. But no, they picked him. That was Diddy's decision. Do you agree or disagree? Is there any way it was anyone's decision but Sean Combs's?
No way. 100% his decision. And not only will he be deciding which lawyer to pick, he'll want to know the outline of the closing statements they're going to make. He's a total control freak. Let me give you an example, Nancy. When I was working with him 20 years ago, we were at Good Morning America, and everybody in the crowd was white. And Diddy knew this was a bad look. And he turned to me and said, where are the people of color? And there were some people there. They were at the back. They were moved to the front. Diddy knows this. In Diddy's concerts, he makes sure that when the camera shoots people in the audience, it's people of color, it's young people, it's pretty people. So he knows image better than anybody else in that courtroom. And I'm shocked that he's allowing this to happen. Not good.
And of course, we've had 50 cents weigh in on the closing arguments. But very quickly, I want everybody to hear, I got a ton of these, man on the streets about the outcome of the trial. Listen to this.
For all my bloggers, reporters, anyone, content creators that have questions for this man, he will be home soon. You heard it here first on EBTV.
That's from Oris Pato on TikTok. Okay, so word on the street is that he's going to walk. Okay, I don't get it. Tisa Tells, what's the word in the courthouse? Because I tell you, who knows what's going to happen? The bailiffs. They always know. They know exactly what's going down. So what's the word, Tisa Tells?
The word in the courtroom is people are not expecting Diddy to walk. They are expecting for the verdict to come in before July 3rd. They think the jury's going to want to take their holiday weekend, but they are not expecting Diddy to walk. And oddly enough, also, a lot of people in the court that work there seem to be very, very kind of thrown off too with the question of Mark Agnifilio and what he was saying. To Rob's point, where he says he doesn't know why Diddy did, there was something in the middle of closing arguments when, after Mark got admonished by the judge, when he came back, Diddy had a huddle. He was mad. He was upset. He literally stood over them like a general, quietly barking orders at them. And Mark went to the jury and then started saying all these nonsensical things. I actually think that Diddy's the one putting him up to have a man close to 60 screaming. She was straight gangster in the courtroom. I actually think Diddy's the one that had him make the argument of he's a better father to Jane's child than the own father because he's paying rent. I think Diddy was behind that. For some reason, he wanted to get those looks in, and he thinks that it's going to win with the jury.
Okay, you need to just hold on, backtrack, because I need every single detail, Tisa Tells. When was Sean Combs standing like the coach of the football team barking orders? But you can't bark them too loud because everybody in the courtroom will hear it. I got to hear the whole thing slowly. I want every detail.
So you see Diddy in the courtroom. And when I say barking orders, and this goes to Diddy's mindset, of course he wasn't screaming it in the courtroom. He was very quiet. How do we know he was barking? Because of his body language. He sat there like a general, like Napoleon, looking at a map of Europe with his hands on the defense table, standing up. We were just coming back from a break. Diddy's team had known they had gone too far and they had accused the government of acting improper. The judge said he was going to issue a curative instruction saying don't say that anymore and disregard. When they came back, he made sure he could have did it in the back room. He made sure to stand there like Napoleon, his fingers spread, standing up, leaning over the defense desk with his band of loyal followers, his defense team, leaned in close. And he made sure by his body movement that we knew, and his body language, that we knew that he was whispering intently, reading his team a new one. And then they were going back and forth. It looked like they were trying to talk sense in him. He was still like letting his body language do the talking. Again, he wanted to let us know that he wasn't happy with his lawyers, which is a very, very weird thing. And after that, Mark Agnifilio, when he started his closing again after break, he said, before we move on, I want to bring up a few issues that I don't think I touched on before. And I said, there you go. There you go. This is what Diddy wanted us to know. Apparently, Diddy wants us to know that if we believe that Cassie is, in his words, a loose woman, an unclean woman, if we know that he was a better father to Jane's child than even Jane's own baby's father because he was paying the rent, then somehow we're going to let it go. He wanted us to know that it was unclear, okay? That it was unclear in the video who the aggressor was. Could have been her, could have been him, maybe it was him. Let's take a look at the evidence and see what you find. Again, these were the nonsensical arguments. And again, Mark seen after Diddy read him a new one to lose his steam. And just, it was a weird energy coming off. He kept seeing like he was trying to recover and he kept going a little bit too far. So I think Diddy's the one pushing these narratives.
Dr. Bethany Marshall, psychoanalyst joining us out of L.A., author of Deal Breaker. You can see her on Peacock and find her online at drbethanymarshall.com. In a nutshell, do people actually still say that? And I can't believe that Agnifilo would actually say that to a jury full of women. Loose woman.
They may not say loose woman, Nancy, but the implication that if a woman is sexual, she's dirty or bad or sinful is still pervasive in our society. And this is why women who are sex trafficked do not have the protections that they should have. Men are allowed to be sexual, women are not. It is pervasive in our society. And this is what we see with P. Diddy all throughout this case. And you know, this leaning against the defense desk, his fingers spread like Napoleon, he's trying to intimidate his attorneys and they are full grown men. Imagine what he did in private with these victims if he's doing this in court in front of everybody, including the jurors.
We are live at the courthouse, standing by Tisa Tells, star of Tisa Tells on YouTube. Tisa, aside from saying, I've just had to make a flow chart, that the alleged rape victim is gangsta, that she could easily take on two or three men at a time and juggle them. I assume that means pulling a in legal terms, calling her a loose woman and all of the charges just, quote, homemade porn. I understand that Sean Combs' son had to be escorted out of the courtroom by bailiffs. What happened?
Well, oddly enough, when he was first escorted out, I assumed that it was something to do with a bathroom break or he felt sick. However, he was wearing a t-shirt that said Free Diddy. And of course, they have made it illegal in the courtroom to have anything that shows support or not support for Diddy. And it makes me wonder, because I still think Diddy is running the whole show. The fact that you had to put your child up to that because they knew the rules. And even at this critical point where you need the jury to feel sorry for you, you need the court, who the judge, by the way, is going to sentence your father, to think that you guys are all law-abiding with a healthy respect for the law. And the fact that you would take that moment to do a stunt queen antic to say Free Diddy and you had to be escorted out of court, again, it makes you think about their minds. I feel like they're living in delusion land. Them, their followers, and even their son that would even put their dad in the situation. But again, I think this is all flowing from the top. This is Diddy.
They had Sean Combs dressed up like a Harvard freshman again in court today, wearing his usual cream-colored sweater. But I heard that throughout the judge's instructions, very often he had his head down. Why? What was happening?
When he had his head down, for some reason, here's the thing. He had his head down. I get what he was going for. He was trying to look contrite. He wants the jury to feel sorry for him. But I will say his messaging and his body language has been very off. In his head, I think he's that young, sprightly 25-year-old that can, you know, shake hands, kiss babies, and charm the ladies. I don't think he realizes that he comes across a little creepy in court. So when he has his head down, it looks like, I get it, you're trying to look sad, but are you going to sleep? Hello, are you up? When he's sitting there trying to look contrite, he looks like somebody's grandfather trying to look like a 3-year-old. Even when you look at his body language, dressed like a Harvard law student, always a fresh haircut, but his hair is graying, which, again, where are you going with the image? I would think that if you are being accused of making these women do freak-offs and it's something you do to please your lover, you would want to look as young and handsome as possible to make it seem like these girls could actually be attracted to you without coercion. That is not the case. So again, it's just another misfire in Diddy thinking he knows more than anything. Now that said, Like Rob said, he's made a whole career out of reading people. So maybe he sees something on the jury that we don't.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Okay, Rob Shooter joining us, host of Naughty But Nice podcast. Rob Shooter, you know, if he walks, the first place he's going is to the Duane Reade or the CVS right around the corner from the courthouse. Actually, he would send a minion to do it. He wouldn't do it himself. And take back up on Just for Men. This whole gray hair act, you know, he's doing that on purpose to make himself look frail and pitiful in front of the jury. Not like a guy that could beat Cassie Ventura's rear end on video, dragging her up and down the hall. And as was pointed out last week, holding on. He didn't mind beating her with one hand. But one thing he did hold on to, he did, was hold on to that towel so this wouldn't show. Okay? Let me see that video one more time, please. No matter what he did, you know, he did the all-star punting kicks. He came running down the hall. Look at that. Grabbing her stuff. Ow. Okay, I never get past those kicks while she's laying there playing dead. But he never lets go of the towel. And many people have suggested it's because at all costs, he doesn't want the cameras to pick up on this. Okay. So, vanity, thy name is Diddy.
I think that's a beautiful, very, very smart way of really summarizing who he is, Nancy. He always is thinking about image. He's always thinking about himself. He's always thinking about the way he can sell something. Let's be really clear here. Puffy is not a star because he's a great rapper, a great singer, a great actor, a great dancer. No, he's a great PR guy. He's a great marketing guy. And so I would imagine he was pretty angry with his son for wearing that t-shirt because it's the opposite thing to what Diddy has been projecting, portraying in the court. So I would imagine Puff was not that happy about that. But I do think here it would be so easy and a mistake for us all to believe that this is over. The word that I'm hearing, not in the courtroom, but on the street in the music business, is they're all expecting him to be home really, really soon. And so you've got to take that into account too. It's very easy to get into this bubble where the evidence is so strong and what should happen is what we want to happen. But often that isn't the case, particularly when a marketing, a manipulative person is involved, and Diddy's that.
Okay, let me ask you this, Shooter. The stories, the true stories that you have told about Sean Combs manipulating the press and other people, and you were there to hear every directive, every order he gave, from what seat he wanted in the expensive restaurant to how he wanted to be videoed as he mounted his private plane, you name it. What directives do you believe he has told his team to execute during closing arguments, and how has he orchestrated the courtroom? Everything from where his family sits, and they've been in the courtroom all day long during these charges, and that's not an easy thing to listen to, by the way, during the trial when they would get up and get down, which, as you know, causes a stir in the courtroom when a family member leaves or comes back. You know that was all orchestrated, what they were wearing, what he's wearing, what his lawyers are wearing, where they sit, how they look at the jury. Everything is orchestrated down to a T. Explain.
That's what he has done for his life, and that's what's made him a really, really big star. The conflict that he has is that he has been portraying himself as quite a humble, gray-haired, maybe now middle-aged gentleman who couldn't possibly do these awful things. And so I think he's done a somewhat convincing job of that. However, the real Diddy, there he is a fighter. And he loves a fight. And if you come at him, he's going to punch you back. And so these closing arguments are typical Diddy. If you remember, before that tape was released, that horrific tape you just showed us, Nancy, before that tape was released, his instinct was to punch Cassie and to say she's a gold digger. She's after my money. And many people, at least in the rap community, believe that until we saw this tape. So I think once again now, he's reverting back to his natural instincts, which is to attack the victim, to make Cassie look like a woman who might have had different types of judgment. I'm not sure it's going to work, Nancy, but I do know there is quite a large demographic who do believe this.
To you, Tisa Tills, joining us outside the Monahan Federal Courthouse as we wait on a verdict. The family there throughout those very long and extensive jury instructions today. Jury instructions are when the judge verbatim reads the law. And there were hundreds of pages of law to read. But the family sat through the whole thing. Describe what was happening in the courtroom.
What was happening in the courtroom was, to Rob's point, Dickie every morning, he does come out the door like a celebrity. He walked in. He paused, almost like he expected everyone to take pictures and whatnot. Now, this is maybe 8 feet he has to walk. He walked to the side. He did his smile. He did the love. He blew kisses at his family, told his daughters he loved them, mouthed, "I love you," and then said, nodding, because he remembered he's supposed to be a frail old man. He forgets sometimes. And then he slowly slinks and sinks into his chair. The whole time, the judge was reading the jury instructions. Diddy was looking down. Sometimes he tried to look straight. Then he would get bored and he would look down again. But the family, with each jury instruction that was read off, the family kept getting more and more uncomfortable. At what point, when they talked about what it is to move prostitution across state lines, the daughters looked at each other. It's always the twins, and then the one little girl is in between them. They all looked at each other. Their physicality. Again, I get what Rob's saying. A lot of people in Diddy's camp think he's coming home. But these are the same people that thought that he'd never get arrested. These are the same people that thought there was never going to be a grand jury investigation. These are the same people that thought his house was never going to be raided. Why do I bring that up? Because I feel like the kids are right there in delusional land. But it was so interesting to see that with each jury instruction, the family got more and more uncomfortable. And they looked more and more nervous because as much as you try to spin this, the law is the law. And maybe he won't be convicted of everything, but there are certain things that when they read out, everybody knows the prosecution proved that on their second, third, fourth day. Again, some facts are just facts. And I think the kids, they're getting a dose of reality when they're in the courtroom.
He is dragging the state's star witness through the mud.
So he's painting her to be this cheater, this liar, this betrayer.
Very 1960s coded misogyny.
Here's the love. There you go. There's all the love Agnifilo's talking about in closing statements.
She was no angel. He even accused Cassie of saying she was raped because she was dating her husband. Or as Mark liked to put it, the oldest trick in the book. They were looking at him like he was crazy. One person had a look of disbelief. It was like a bomb went off.
Tisa Tells, outside the courthouse, has just reported that inside the courthouse, the word is Diddy's going down. But not everybody agrees.
There's no drug possession charges. There's no, like, assault. There's not really charges that you could say, well, you know, I don't want to send him to prison for 15 years, but I don't like him and he's a bad person, so let's convict him of this and he'll get a couple years, which is very often what juries do.
True. He may be no legal scholar. That's from Al Profit on TikTok. But that's the point. This case is not being determined or judged by legal scholars. It's being judged by 12 jurors. Joining me, in addition to Tisa Tells outside the courthouse, an all-star panel, let's go straight out to Eric Faddis joining us, veteran trial lawyer and founding partner of Varner Faddis Elite Legal. Eric, while we may think the state has proven its case, it's really up to the jury. And I mean, the Vegas odds are 50-50 right now. And I think that may reflect what's going on. So just because the climate inside the courthouse is conviction-oriented, remember, you're surrounded by bailiffs. Everybody in the courthouse, many of them work for the state.
That doesn't mean that's the slant the jury's taking, Faddis.
100%. In fact, getting these takes, you know, from the street and from folks on YouTube, that could be a better glimpse into how these lay jurors are actually seeing this case. Look, this is an uphill battle. It's not a slam dunk by any means. We're talking about allegations over the course of decades. There are all these moving parts, 34 different witnesses, conflicting evidence, credibility issues. When you put all of that together, it's difficult to meet that burden of proof beyond a reasonable doubt, which is the highest burden in the justice system.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace.
Right now, we know Sean Combs has been sweating bullets in the courtroom all day, continuously looking over at the jury, darting his gaze over at them throughout the judge's instructions. Joining me, Danny Pinter, Senior VP and Director of the Law Center at the National Center on Sexual Exploitation. Danny, when you hear phrases like, oh, she was gangsta straight up, she could take on 2-3 men at a time, she was a, quote, loose woman, she got paid. In another moment, Agnifilo said, he only hit her twice, referring to, I believe that was Jane. He only hit her twice? That's the defense?
Yeah, I found it honestly disgusting, and I hope the jury does too. I think it was weak and unpersuasive, and the defense went too far. The jury has to contend with the facts, which I think, you know, as a legal expert, I think the prosecution met their burden, but what story is the jury going to believe? And does the defense really think the jury is going to believe the story that Cassie Ventura had all of the power and Diddy is the victim? I don't think anyone's buying that.
Joining me now, Robert Crispin, PI at Crispin Special Investigations, but for our purposes, former Federal Task Force Officer, USDOJ, DEA, Miami Field Division, former homicide. For my purposes tonight, former Vice, and you can find him at CrispinInvestigations.com. Robert, the rubber hits the road now. It's go time. The evidence is in. The witnesses are gone. All that's left are the lawyers, the judge, Diddy, and the jury. Throughout the day, I believe we saw a different Diddy. Cautiously, furtively, glancing at the jury, darting his eyes back and forth as those jury instructions were read. I know the feeling, because throughout a jury trial, I would watch the judge, the witness, the jury. Witness, jury, witness, jury. It's like a tennis match. And you can't say anything. You can only watch and observe, make notes. Throughout the jury instructions today, Sean Combs sweating bullets. I think now, Crispin, it's hitting home, and you've seen it a million times. It's all big talk, bravado. She is a quote, loose woman. She's straight up gangsta. I can't believe Whitebread Agnifilo fixed his mouth to say Cassie's gangsta. Oh, okay, that was way cringy. But now it's down to it. And Combs is sitting there staring at the jury. You've seen it happen a million times.
Yeah, listen, this is gonna be tough for both sides. You know, the government's gonna sit back and they're gonna wonder, did we do this right? The defense is gonna look back and say, did we say the right thing in closing to put that reasonable doubt just in one juror? Just that one juror, did I do that? Did I get that out there? And Diddy's realizing that federal court is no joke. Federal court is the real deal. And, you know, the videos, the electronic evidence, the witness testimony, it all comes down to these people sitting in the jury box and going back and thinking everything through and coming up whether guilty or not guilty. And do they understand the jury instructions? Those jury instructions are pretty intense, especially the RICO and the racketeering. Those are pretty intense. However, what's going to be interesting is what are the questions that are going to come out from the jury? That kind of gives us a telltale sign of where they're going. What are they thinking? What's the question? Why are they asking this question about a certain piece of evidence? So as time goes and ticks away, we're going to kind of have a little bit more idea once one of those questions start coming in, or two questions. This is a bad day for Diddy, because I think through all his testimony and making contact with the jury and smiling, complimenting the judge and sitting back and leaning forward and back in his chair like he's a badass. That's different today. His life is in the balance. He is about to, if found guilty, go to prison for the rest of his life. That's a big pill to swallow.
Rob Shooter joining me, host of Naughty But Nice podcast, and you can find him at his Substack. Rob, the daughters who have had to leave court several times in tears during the testimony, that's a whole nother can of worms why he had his daughters and children in there listening to the worst of the worst from the state. They all dressed in black today. And I remember prosecuting. I never wore like red, yellow, vibrant orange because the cases I prosecuted were all violent felonies. And it just seemed wrong. It just seemed inappropriate. And so it's a very solemn note. And you know that Diddy orchestrated right down to what they were wearing.
Yeah, I think you're right, Nancy. What I will say, though, here is that there's a little bit of performance going on, too, with the kids. I don't want to go after someone's kids for their parents' crimes, but it has been undoubted that Puffy's kids have had a really amazing life because of their dad. And because of what their dad does and who their dad is, these are not the Von Trapp family. They have seen a lot. These kids have been around his parties. They've been around
not
his life.
Not the Von Trapp family. Did you just... You're talking about, what, the seven children of in Sound of Music that would put on those frocks and sing at the family music festival? Yeah, no, the Von Trapps, they ain't. That's true. Go ahead.
They ain't that. This is a family that has been around money, power, fame, celebrity, sex, violence. They've heard their dad's songs. They've rapped along to other rap artists. These are very aggressive lifestyles, and they were born into this lifestyle. So they're really used to seeing, hearing, and maybe even participating in some very, 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 what we would consider strange scenes, strange environments. So I wouldn't feel too bad for the kids here. I think that they're part of the Combs family. It's a deal that maybe they didn't want to make. They had no choice in it, but they've been born into this lifestyle and they have benefited from their dad's success, from his money.
Surprised you brought up the Von Trapp family. Weren't they raised by a nun, Sister Maria? Remember her, AKA Julie Andrews? Okay, these children have not been raised by a nun, okay? But following up on what you said, to me, Dr. Bethany Marshall, that makes me feel for these children even more so because they never had what I had. Of course, I grew up on a red dirt road drinking water from a well my grandfather dug in the backyard, okay? But you know what I did have? I had a mother that took care of me and a father. Both of them worked all day into the night, came home, had supper with us, and they were there for me. I mean, it ain't easy for my dad to work on the railroad and my mom to work at a factory, right? But they did. But we had love. These children never had that constant in their life. Now they're sitting in their dad's felony trial. A lot of people have asked me, wow, how do you feel about Christian Combs putting you on a diss track? I didn't see it that way at all. I didn't see it as a diss at all. I saw it as an adult son trying to take up for his father. And I actually feel bad that they're in that position.
I do too, Nancy. They've been raised in a culture of sex abuse, of violence, a culture of narcissism, guns, multiple mothers, half siblings. You know, it's just a very confusing environment. And, you know, this is going to be a therapeutic experience for them sitting in court because they have to take in all kinds of information about
their
father.
Have you lost your mind? You're calling your father accused of sex trafficking therapeutic, okay?
Yes, I am, Nancy. It's called
You're out in Beverly Hills, and I was raised on a dirt road, but ain't nothing therapeutic about hearing the truth about your father, that he's a sex trafficker.
I think so. I do, Nancy, because they have to be in reality. They've been raised in an upside-down world. Listen to what Agnifilo said today, okay? So when he says that Cassie Ventura was just trying to please her man, you know, just because your man wants and you don't, but you're just going to do it to make him happy. He's basically saying women need to take it up. Okay, as an analyst, I hear all the metaphors. I help those kids sitting in court, hearing all this degradation of women, have a good therapist to talk to so they can make sense of it. And all of this putting women down because Cassie Ventura got $20 million. You know, with Michael Jackson, when he paid his first victim $30 million, we didn't say that 9-year-old was a gold digger. We said Michael Jackson must have done something really, really bad if he paid out $30 million. And all this money, I think, is because it's because P. Diddy really needs to cover his tracks.
Not everyone agrees with the Diddy team. Listen.
12 jurors, possibly next week, will start deliberating. But what they're going to remember is what happened at that hotel right behind me.
Tell it, man. That's from Oris Apato at TikTok. Straight out to the courthouse to Sydney Sumner, Crime Stories investigative reporter. What happened?
Judge Subramanian wrapped up jury instructions and sent the 5 alternates home, of course reminding them to stay by their phones and stay off social media on the chance they may be called up to the final jury. Now, the final jury was sent off to begin deliberating. They needed to choose a 4-person before they got any further into their discussions. And that decision was made pretty quickly. Juror number 5 selected as the jury 4-person. Now, with the jury out of the room, Judge Subramanian did stop to congratulate both the prosecutors and the defense on a case well-tried and well-defended before Sean Combs was sent off to his holding cell. Combs was allowed to bring a book with him, and he will remain in that cell until the jury ends their deliberations for the day or comes back with a verdict, and that could be after 5 p.m. Subramanian left their schedule up to the jurors. As Combs was led away from the courtroom, his family all stood, they were holding hands, their heads were bowed, and when Judge Subramanian got off the bench, they actually started clapping before they made their own way out of the courtroom. Now, it wasn't long before we heard some movement from the jury. They actually passed a note to the judge, and it expressed concern over one of the jurors on this final panel. They were afraid that juror number 25 cannot follow the instructions that Judge Subramanian gave them. So it's unclear exactly what happened in that deliberation room, but there's apparently already some dissonance back there. Ultimately, Judge Subramanian didn't make any move to have some kind of confrontation with juror 25, sending a note back that just said, "You've heard my instructions, you need to follow them. That's the duty that you are charged with."
What will the jury do? We are in a verdict watch, and now we remember an American hero, Officer Jacob Chaffins, Prestonburg PD, just 28, shot in the line of duty after 3 years with LE. Leaves behind wife Savannah and daughter Paisley. American hero, Officer Jacob Chaffins. Nancy Grace signing off. Goodbye, friend. This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.